Welcome to the Placebo Magic Podcast, the podcast about theatrical spiritual practice for atheists. I'm your host, Durmok, the wizard and peasant lord of this vast 10-acre realm of Hobdur, also known as Farm Code Gary, also known as Garrison Benson.
Greetings, placebo mages. Today, contrasting two different ways of thinking about goodness, selflessness versus skillfulness. But first, thank you to our newest Patreon backers, Stacy, Blackjack Sadie, and Carmen. And thank you to our patrons at the producer level or above, Alconet, Emily, Red Rum Soda Pop, A Sociology of Tarot, Annie, Brianne, Carmen, Carrie, Dev, Vonka, Gyun, The Turkey Whisperer, Tony, Valerie, Winter, and Zoe. So before we get into the topic, I want to make a little announcement here, which is that next month, in July, will be the 50th episode of this podcast, not including the Patreon episodes. And it will also be the final episode in season two, which is just kind of a totally arbitrary decision to end there, but it seems like, you know, the 30th episode of season two and the 50th episode total is like a nice round stopping point to kind of launch into a new season. And with the new season, I'm going to do a little bit of tweaking of the sort of scope of the podcast. Nothing too drastic, but we'll do that in, you know, that season three starting in August. But what I wanted to talk about with as far as next month is that, you know, there's this feature on the hosting platform for the podcast. It's hosted on Anchor, and there's a feature on there of, you know, listeners being able to leave voice messages that you can then, you know, play on the show. And it's not a feature I've really talked about much. I've talked about it a little bit on the Discord, but I've so far never had any, you know, voice messages submitted. And so I have two, you know, one is I would like to kind of break the ice on having that happen and kind of getting some more voices on here and kind of adding a little more variety into the format of the show in terms of being able to you know, take questions or comments by voice. And just, you know, most episodes, it's just me talking, which is a little monotonous. So if we can get some, like, kind of break up that monotony in terms of just like acoustic monotony by having some other voices, and then also just kind of inject a little more, you know, outside perspectives, I think that'd be great. And so what I'm asking you, the audience, to do for me is to go on to that website where you can, you know, record your voice message and send me a message. And, you know, it could be just as simple as, hey, you know, congrats on 50 episodes, but it could also be a question or a suggestion or some kind of, you know, like a quick, like, little like spell or ritual that you want to share for other listeners, or really anything like that. The only kind of caveat is that it has to be under a minute. A minute is like the limit. So you got to be kind of brief and not too rambly, which is a rule that I don't hold myself to, but I'm going to hold you to, because that's what the platform allows. So unless I get an overwhelming amount of messages, or I get messages that are not appropriate to share, or I get you know what I'm saying, I'm not going to, within reason, I'll play them all on the next episode as kind of like a cool 50th episode celebration, and a way to kind of like, I'd love for people who have been listening to be able to hear their own voice on the show and kind of have that, I don't know, just, it'd be fun for all of us, I think. And then going forward, I'd hope to incorporate that feature a little more in, you know, kind of have listener feedback in that voice format more regularly. So you can go into the show notes and check out, you know, how to do that, or you can go to my website, which is now garrisonbenson.com, but you can also do farmcodegary.com. That works still as well. And you can find a link there to get to this voice recording thingy. So go ahead and check that out. And I hope that I hear from some of you. All right. So what I had planned for this month was to talk about kind of the good and bad of my experience with Christianity, and kind of use that to illustrate just kind of like a nuanced approach to, like, you know, the baby in the bathwater, like keeping the good, getting rid of the bad. But given the kind of recent events in the U.S., I've kind of lost my appetite for that, and instead I'm just gonna take one piece of that discussion and zoom in on it and make that this whole episode. And essentially I'm gonna throw Christianity under the bus, not in the way that you might think based on the news, but I just I thought it would be kind of tone deaf to try to, you know, take this Mr. Rogers approach this time of history particularly. So anyway, what I want to get at is I want to contrast two different ways of sort of thinking about your own goodness and or your own evil or whatever. And one of them is the one that I was kind of raised on in the church and Christianity. The other one is one that I encountered through Buddhism. I don't want to misrepresent here. I'm not speaking as an authority on Buddhism or anything like that. I'm just coming at this using my I statements here and saying this is something that I encountered through, you know, specifically Thich Nhat Hanh, but also other Buddhist sources where you know, this is where I was exposed to this way of looking at things, and I found it helpful. So the first kind of framework for evaluating my own goodness was this selflessness versus selfishness. And this is a dichotomy that is certainly not unique to Christianity. It's not unique to the Western world, but I can say with certainty that in my upbringing, this was very heavily like reinforced in Sunday school. And it's something that, you know, some of you may remember from past episodes, I've talked about how my own personal, you know, history, I was raised kind of conservative evangelical, and then very gradually moved into like a far left progressive flavor of Christianity before I kind of just like, you know, stopped believing. So all that to say that this particular dichotomy of like selfishness versus selflessness was pretty heavily emphasized in all of the flavors of Christianity that I experienced, from this conservative evangelical to the sort of mid-range Dutch Reform to this far left progressive radical Christianity. This was pretty much omnipresent throughout all of that. And it's the idea that selfishness and selflessness are like, it's like a zero-sum game between the two of them. And like, the more selfish you are, the less selfless you are, and the more selfless you are, the less selfish you are. And I guess if you define those terms as that literally, then I guess it makes sense. But I think that what the effect of that is that people pat themselves on the back for not practicing self-care, and ultimately that has the result of you becoming more and more of a jerk. And so for me, you know, when I encountered Thich Nhat Hanh, and then kind of through him, you know, more broadly like Buddhist concepts and more Eastern religion kind of concepts, you know, he introduced me to this term skillfulness. And so when someone's like mean to you, you can think like, well, rather than thinking they're a bad person or they're selfish, you think like they're unskillful, or that what they did was unskillful. And likewise, when you've, you know, done something that you regret or whatever, you can think, well, I wasn't very skillful in that moment. And I think that what I like about this and why it's so helpful is that it doesn't set self-care and selflessness as being opposing forces. It acknowledges that, you know, and not just that term itself, but just the whole, you know, framework. It acknowledges that like taking care of yourself is a prerequisite to being a good person in terms of how you interact with others. And it was such a relief to encounter that and to realize that like it's okay to be nice to myself, and that I can use these two motivations in service of one of each other. So if I'm really, you know, stressed out because I said something or did something that I regretted that injured a relationship, then I can use that to motivate myself to practice self-care. And if I'm motivated to like, I want to feel better about myself, I want to feel good, I want more, you know, happiness in my life, that can motivate me to be more, you know, altruistic, more selfless, so to speak. And so they're not, you know, they're not opposing forces. They're mutually beneficial forces. And I think that, you know, like the science of happiness and well-being pretty solidly backs that up. Like, being isolated from other people and only attending to yourself is not a recipe for happiness. Whereas being, you know, like a supportive member of a community is very positive, and being generous is very positive for your own like hedonistic pleasure and so on. So, you know, around the time that I encountered Thich Nhat Hanh, I remember thinking a lot about this, where it's like, if your goal was to be as selfish as possible and like maximize all good things for yourself, then if you were really good at it and, you know, kind of had perfected the art of selfishness, then you would be a very generous, altruistic, grateful person and be a, you know, have strong social connections and so on. If you were kind of bad at it, then you might be greedy and alienated and so on. Because what we know of what we know about happiness, you know? And likewise, if you were trying to maximize your like altruism, then if you were really good at it and, you know, you kind of had mastered the art of altruism, you would be spending quite a lot of time on self-care and a lot of your energy on self-care, because you would know that that is needs to be done in order for you to be a good person. That's like a foundational skill, is like self-management. And if you were kind of bad at altruism, then you would not practice self-care, you know? Like that's called being like a mediocre at altruism, is like not taking care of yourself. And I think for me, and I think many other people, the biggest obstacle to self-care oftentimes is permission. It's like maybe you have the skills, but you just have a really hard time giving yourself permission, particularly when there is suffering in the world or suffering in among your loved ones or in your community, or you know, when there's scary things on TV or in the news and what have you. It's hard to give yourself permission to practice self-care because you think, well, other people are suffering and there's all these difficult things happening, so it's not fair for me to feel happy. It's not fair for me to prioritize myself. But when you start to like understand intuitively and like really kind of internalize the belief that actually self-care makes you more effective at being, you know, good to others and like advocating for justice and things like that, then suddenly that kind of unlocks that knot of like not having permission to take care of yourself. Just to go back to this kind of like selfishness versus selflessness false dichotomy, I specifically remember in Sunday school, there was this thing, I don't know what grade this was in, probably like third grade, where they have this little saying, joy, J-O-Y, Jesus, others, you. And it's like the order in which you should prioritize, you know, like Jesus first, then other people, then yourself, put yourself last. And I just think that's not actually, it doesn't actually work. Like if your goal is to be as good of a person as possible, that doesn't work. It can be as simple as like hangry. You're hangry because you, I don't know, there's, I'm going to throw someone under the bus a little bit, but they're never going to listen to this. There's somebody in my community who is like a volunteer who gets hangry because he puts in too long of hours volunteering. It doesn't go like get food. And then he's mean to other volunteers because he's hangry. And, you know, it's just one of those things, like you're not benefiting the organization by not going and eating. You know, like what is that? you might think that you're like taking one for the team and suffering through and, you know, powering through your hunger. But the fact is that you turn mean when you get hungry. Everybody knows it. So just go take care of yourself first, come back, and then you can be nice to the other volunteers and then they won't quit. So, I mean, it can be as simple as that, but it can be, you know, I can think of so many times where like I look back on, you know, romantic relationships from years ago and looking back and realizing like the biggest obstacle that I had to being a good partner was my inability or unwillingness to take care of myself. And some of that was lack of knowledge, skill, you know, some of that was just lack of permission because of this false dichotomy, this idea that you got to put other people before yourself, that, you know, kind of pat yourself on the back for being a martyr. And this is one of the things that is a tragic flaw of Christianity, is that, like, I think that Jesus as a historical person is a very admirable person and someone who's worth emulating and someone who is worth like taking seriously as someone who can like change your perspective, you know, in a positive way. But I don't think the fact that he got killed is what we should admire about him. And not that it's his fault, but it's just that that's not the part we should be trying to emulate. You know, it's like emulate the compassion and the understanding and the forgiveness and that stuff. Don't emulate the persecution. why would you do that? You know, and I think that Christianity, you know, you have Jesus and then you have this series of martyrs that came after, and then you also have kind of the people that came before that Jesus referenced, the, you know, prophets who were stoned and stuff. And I think, you know, Jesus may have taken a little bit of validation from his own persecution, which is not healthy. And I think that certainly Christians today tend to act as if, like, if I'm being persecuted, then that means that I'm doing something right, when it may just be that you're mean and people don't like you because you're mean. Usually that's a more straightforward answer to that than, oh, I'm being persecuted for my beliefs or whatever. It's kind of an Occam's razor thing. It's like, are you just a jerk? And I think that kind of glorification of martyrdom, that glorification of suffering, is a thread that runs through it's pretty deeply woven into that faith. And I think it's a problem. I mean, I think it's something that, it's one of the sort of tragic flaws of that religion that, again, it's not unique to Christianity. It's part of the secular Western world, and it's part of the rest of the world, you know, too, this kind of idea that, oh, you got to take one for the team or whatever. You got to sacrifice for your employer, or you got to sacrifice for your family or whatever. That happens everywhere. But the fact that you go to church and that you're getting that idea reinforced rather than what you should be getting, which is to be kind of instructed in like how to be good. You know, this is one of the things that I experienced growing up where I feel like the virtues that I was taught to value are pretty much things that almost everybody would agree on, you know, like compassion, humility, gentleness, generosity, like all these kind of things, mercy, you know, most people around the world would sort of agree with those. The thing was that my upbringing, it taught me what I should be in terms of what, you know, what virtues I should express, but it didn't do a particularly good job in instructing like how to cultivate those things. And one of the biggest roadblocks to being able to cultivate those things for me was self-care. It's like, it's hard to give myself permission to practice self-care when I think I'm supposed to be putting other people first. And if I feel bad, that means I'm doing something right, because that's what I'm like following in Jesus's footsteps or something like that. Yeah, this is something one of the reasons I wanted to do this topic this month is because of all the stuff with Roe v. Wade and I mean, it seems like every day there's something really upsetting, you know, going on. And I think that it's very difficult when there is suffering in the world and the threat of suffering to be happy. And again, this is like, there's part of it is it's difficult to be happy because, you know, you're feeling the suffering that other people are feeling, or you're anticipating the suffering that other people might feel in the future. And that's just kind of like, that's empathy, you know, that's like, you're just, your body is kind of mirroring what it believes other people are feeling or going to feel. And that's part of what connects you to humanity and motivates you to be a decent person. But there's also this other element of not giving ourselves permission to be happy and thinking that if we sort of stop ourselves from being happy, I mean, thinking this kind of, when I say thinking, I mean sort of subconsciously, you know, blocking ourselves from being happy, that we're somehow practicing solidarity, or that it's not fair for us to be happy, or that we feel kind of almost like a survivor's guilt sort of situation, or what have you, or we think that being happy is going to demotivate us to help others and help change the situation. When in fact, I think that's just not true. First of all, happiness and sadness are not diametrically opposed forces. Like they're almost two independent variables. You can be happy and sad simultaneously. You can also be kind of numb. This is something we talked a little bit about in last month's bonus episode, that you can increase your resilience by offsetting negative emotions with positive emotions. Think about like the ratio of positive to negative emotions that you have. If you're going to wade into a situation where you're going to experience a lot of negative emotions, then in order to keep your body and your brain like resilient and like able to deal with that, you need to offset those with positive emotions in order to keep that ratio in a healthy range. And so I think that this idea that you're going to feel guilty for experiencing joy in the face of upsetting and scary things in the news or what have you, like that's not a helpful instinct. It's just leading us entirely in the wrong direction. You know, being able and willing to seek out happy things, happy thoughts, you know, happy experiences, that is not a detriment to your ability to empathize. It's actually a boost to it. It helps you to increase your capacity for that. So I say all this mainly as a way of just like, for me, I find this kind of thinking very helpful in order to unlock that permission and be like, okay, actually it's not only is it okay to be happy right now, like I don't have to wait for all of the problems in the world to go away before I'm allowed to be happy. It's not only is it okay, but it's like actually one of the things I need to do if I want to be able to be there for people. And I think that this year, it's kind of given me a lot of like firsthand evidence or like kind of anecdotal evidence in my ability to kind of take that and sort of internalize it. Like if you're a Patreon supporter, you may remember the bonus episode called Gathering Evidence, where I was talking about how, you know, just because you know something is like scientifically true doesn't mean you're actually going to abide by it. And like, you know, your subconscious may not actually believe it. It may not shape your behavior until you actually gather this kind of like more tangible firsthand evidence that your sort of animal brain can connect the dots more easily in between cause and effect and, you know, your associative memory rather than just having like a factoid. So just the idea of like believing consciously that self-care is actually a prerequisite to altruism. It's not enough. You have to actually kind of believe it in your gut and like in the part of you that actually kind of autopilots most of your day-to-day behaviors through your associative memory. And so for me this year, I've had this opportunity kind of like over and over again to observe myself. Like I have had some of my friendships have kind of like leveled up where they've gone from being like, oh, this is a person I like and I hang out with occasionally to this is a person that like we really have a relationship of mutual support. And then I've also have some new friendships that have kind of achieved that level of mutual support. And then also my family's been going through a lot of difficulties this year with health and death and things like that. So between all of those factors, it's like I've really been able to kind of observe like firsthand that when my own like happiness falters, my happiness, both like my mood, but also my self-care and my like prioritization of happiness, my ability to like to keep sustaining that and like feed myself happiness, when that falters, my ability to be there for other people falters. Like it's a one-to-one, you know, it's like it's a very clear and direct correlation, like super abundantly clear. You know, your mileage may vary. I know there's a lot of people for whom you have kind of like caretaker burnout and things like that. I think that the gist of this is going to be true for everybody, but the actual kind of like, you know, the breaking point, the thresholds are going to change a little bit depending on you and your orientation and kind of how you're wired. But the general idea that self-care is a very critical part of like being able to care for others, that, you know, that's I think pretty much universal. So yeah, like I've said, this is a problem that Christianity like pretty strongly reinforces, but it's just prevalent throughout Western society and probably throughout the world. I think it's going to take somewhat different forms, but I know, you know, in American culture, you certainly find this in the church where people kind of pat themselves on the back for suffering and they think that that is evidence that they are good, when in fact, it's oftentimes the reason that they're not good. But you find it like in the workplace a lot too, where, you know, people pat themselves on the back for working too many hours or for not getting enough sleep. You know, this hustle culture that kind of conflates suffering with productivity, you know, or contributions. Well, if I'm not getting enough sleep or if I'm putting in 65 hours a week, that means that I'm contributing more than someone who's not. When in fact, that may be like contrary to available, you know, research that productivity doesn't really go up when you add on more hours, and at least in many types of work. So it's just, you know, something that you kind of, if you're keeping your eyes open, you'll see it in all kinds of different applications, whether it's parenting, romantic relationships, workplace, community organizations, like, you know, volunteering opportunities, activism. You know, there's all kinds of these places where people are going to be patting themselves on the back for being miserable and thinking that that means that, you know, if you can picture this like a scale that they think that because one side of the scale is one way, that means the other side of the scale is the other way, when that's not how the variables work together. You know, that your own suffering doesn't make you a more effective contributor to the bigger picture. My hope for this episode is that this gives you some permission to practice self-care, and that you can kind of hook up those two motivations so that you know, if you're motivated to feel better and not be as miserable, that pursuing that goal, even though it may feel selfish, is actually going to make you more capable and effective at being a contributing member of society and, you know, contributing to the greater good. And that if you're like highly motivated to contribute to the greater good and you have a very difficult time giving yourself permission to take care of yourself, that, you know, you're able to connect up those motivations and realize like, no, actually, if I'm super motivated to be altruistic, then that means that I need to get serious about self-care and make this a priority. So my hope is that this can kind of help to dissolve those obstacles, realizing that it's not about, am I selfish or am I selfless? It's about, am I getting more skillful over time? Rather than ask yourself, am I selfish or selfless? Instead, you know, ask yourself, am I getting more skillful at both of those things? If you get really, really skillful at prioritizing yourself versus if you get really, really skillful at prioritizing altruism, those two things converge. And a master of self-care and a master of altruism are, in my opinion, going to be the same. And when the time comes where, you know, kind of sacrifice of some kind is called for, it's not necessarily going to feel like sacrifice to the person who is in that experience firsthand, because they're, you know, your sense of self, of identity is going to be expanded to include the community, humanity, you know, life on Earth, etc. So that selfishness and altruism just become identical.
You can find the Placebo Magic Podcast and my poetry and other writing on the web at farmcodegary.com. Send your feedback to farmcodegary@protonmail.com and let me know if I can read your feedback on the show. Music is by Kevin MacLeod of incompetech.com and licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 license. You can support the show by giving us a review on your podcast app of choice, sharing an episode with a friend, or becoming a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/placebomagic. Patreon supporters also gain access to our Patreon-exclusive bonus show. Remember, magic is a metaphor, and metaphor is magical.